Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Yes, it is. Right now on Fast Money, a sea of green on Wall Street as major indexes snap their two-day losing streaks. But there's a couple of charts that could tell the true story of where the market is heading from here. And we're going to show you and tell you what they are. Plus, another massive hack hitting the crypto world. Millions of dollars of an Ethereum rival stolen. What it all means for the future of digital currencies. And then later, a stealth rally stock. This mega cap, not a MAGA cap name, has quietly risen in 14 of the last 16 trading days. It's up nearly 50% from its May lows. We're going to tell you what it is and how you should play it. I'm Joe Kernan, in for Melissa Lee. This is Fast Money, live from the NASDAQ market site in the heart of Times Square. And on the desk tonight, Karen Feinerman, Steve Grasso, both decided to return to work. And then, I won't say slackers, but Guy Adami and Bono and Eisen, nice enough to join the party as well. And we appreciate you being here. Guy, I haven't seen you in a while. I was hoping you were going to actually be here, make the effort, but it's good to see you nonetheless.
And plus, Guy, the last time that I stayed home, Joe didn't call on me for a good 14 minutes.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about him.
That I was actually on the show as well.
You know, we got to move. That's what I keep hearing. We got to move. We got to start with the strong rebound on Wall Street. The Dow climbing more than 400 points. S&P 500 up 1.5%. And the NASDAQ posting its highest close since early May. And on a relative basis, 2.5% on the NASDAQ, leading these indexes all the way through July and now in August. But our traders think there are some other charts that may be telling the true tale of the market. Guy Adami, it says somewhere that you're the most interesting man on the show, but I think they took that out. Guy Adami, because we want to be factual here, what are you watching?
Well, just so people understand, the only reason you like it when I come in is because I typically bring you things. Sometimes if your back is bothering you, I bring you like a heating pad or things like that. And that's just factual as well. With that said, I think... For me, it's about high yield. It's always been about high yield. The credit market is seemingly okay. And if you look at the HYG, it would suggest that the bounce from sort of 72 to current levels coincides with the bounce in the broader market. I still think there's a credit problem lying in store. I still think you have to have HYG on your radar screen. I'm not suggesting you trade it at all, but I do think there's another leg lower in HYG, and I do think that will coincide with the next leg lower in the stock market.
New lows?
You know, 36 and change was the low. We said for a while the next look. I will tell you, Steve Grasso came on the show, and we all did in June 15th, and said, "Listen, this market is completely oversold. We will bounce to 4,100. From that bounce, we will make new lows, and that half of that has come to fruition. So I'll stand by it. You know, I still think 3,400 is in the cards here.
Just talking to Karen about it. I don't know. The Nasdaq's moved to the point where it just reminds me of periods past where people didn't have the nerve to step in, and it just doesn't back up. Sometimes we'll see, maybe it does, but you know, it all of a sudden, you know, you see where it is now. Don't you wish it was back where it was? And you really think it's headed there? I don't know, Grasso. What do you think?
Yeah. So
you want to talk oil anyway?
Yeah, but I think this is all could be tied into it. So I think you have an opening. I think what we're going to see is peak inflation come next week with the peak CPI number. If you have peak inflation, what else do you have? Peak Powell. If you have peak Powell and peak inflation, you get the market rallying. So I think you have another window for maybe another couple of weeks. But I also believe that Powell is not going to take his foot off the gas on raising rates, which is a negative for the overall economy and a negative for the market as a whole. So if I had to sum this all up in this financial soup, I think we'll get, I agree with Guy, I think you'll start to see, and you look at the oil chart. Dipped. Look at lumber. Look at wheat. But look at specifically oil. Today, what did we hear about OPEC? OPEC had the smallest add to production in the history. They might as well not have added anything. And what did oil do? It sold off. If that is where we're putting all our eggs in that basket, then you're going to be in for a surprise when you see CPI come in shy of where it's supposed to come in, because now you had gasoline fall off a cliff, commodities fell off a cliff. That will be captured in food and energy in next week's print in the CPI. So therefore, the market thinks that Powell will stop raising rates sooner. I don't think that's the case. He's going to overreach. And that's why you see the inversion of the yield curve.
These guys, they're like children. I said it to Jim Bullard this morning, who was on for an hour and a half. I don't know if you saw it, but it's great that he came on. He was on set. You guys stick with your transitory. You're dead wrong. And to his credit, he didn't stay as long as the other guys at the transitory part. Now they're sticking with, oh, it's going to last forever, and it could go up from here. And I think they're going to, you know, pendulum swings, and I'm not so sure. So Bonawin, your analysis plays into this, too. So you think a VIX at 20 is just an accident, like, waiting to happen. That's bearish, right?
Yeah, I do. I think it pretty much sets up for a bearish setup. I mean, we've kind of been in this 20 to 30 range for some time. That's kind of been the trading range. And I know we're kind of mixing up investing and trading, so I'll kind of speak to both. You know, the 20 level speaks to, I don't know, just the malaise that's there. I mean, I guess you said Guy and I were in that camp. We're kind of just kind of slugging along, we'll show up when we want to, and that seems to be investor sentiment right now, which is, you know what, the Fed meeting won't happen in August, we won't have anything from Powell until September, so while the parents are away, the kids will play, and that seems to be kind of the situation that we're in right now. You know, if anything, if you really believe in this rally, you're also looking at other risk assets, and this would be an ideal time to kind of put some protection on, but you're not seeing that. In fact, you're seeing sellers of volatility. And that, to me, just speaks to the fact that we have completely swung from one side of the pendulum, which we thought earnings were going to completely crap out. Now we're in a situation where we're unwilling to pay for protection. And it's those times where you don't pay for insurance, where you look back and you wish you had it.
Karen?
Agree. I mean, my final trade was buy S&P puts today, which I did. I want to be one of those buying protection when you feel like you don't need it. But as to the charts, what do I think is sort of the most interesting chart to me, or the most compelling? And if we have the crack staff and EC can show the yield curve chart, which Steve touched on, or not. It's a fascinating curve. Okay, there it is. I've never seen a curve just like that. I kind of think of it as a bit of a Yogi Berra yield curve. We're lost, but we're making good time. What does that tell us? That short term, we're going to see rates rise a lot, and then we're going to have a recession, and that's going to bring rates down. And then in the long term, who knows? I think there's some also thin trading, so maybe the 20 years out of whack. What the hell to make of all of that? I'm in Steve's camp. I think that this Fed, I agree that inflation has peaked. It doesn't matter. The distance between where inflation needs to be and where it is still so wide. Powell cannot possibly risk having the genie out of the bottle, and maybe he had a chance to get it back in and takes his foot off the gas or the brakes, however you want to say it. I think he's going to keep raising. I don't think that pivot was a pivot at all. I heard hawkish.
And if you think about this, though, I know you want to go back to Guy, but if you think about this with the short end of the curve, everyone wants to go back. Okay. I want to go back to Guy. The short end of the curve right now, tech is more sensitive to the long end of the curve. And value is more sensitive to the short end of the curve, right? So that's the premise that you have to get in your brain. So if next week the CPI doesn't come in as hot, then value should, in theory, outperform. Tech should sell off. In a perfect world, if everything goes according to plan, which it never does. Plus, remember one last thing. We're not going to hear from him, or he's not going to have any action, he being Powell, until September. That's awfully close to the midterm elections. Now, I know they're not a political organization, but I don't think you're going to see anything out of left field. So I think it does set up for a year-end rally. So even though I think we all collectively think the market will sell off, year-end rally, I think, is probably a good estimate for November. The last 2 months of the year, where you get a little squishy, is September, October for me, where I think you could see this market, as Guy led off the show, with revisiting those lows.
I was hoping we're at 9. Inflation. I was hoping we'd meet somewhere like in the middle. Bowler today said 2. I go, how about
what?
4?
He
said 2.
It's going to 2 or
no,
it has
he
to be
said
two.
We're getting it down to 2.
No. We have to get
we're
down.
Getting it down to 2, back down to 2. I would have
Is he saying we're not going to stop until we get to two? Is that what you inferred?
That's what I inferred from what he was saying, that they're deadly serious about that mandate of 2%. And, you know, I was hoping, you know, inflation comes down, the PCE comes to, I don't know, something better than where it is, and then you eventually can assume that, you know, that you can pause. I'm arguing for stop and start, which killed guys back in the 70s, killed them, because it came right back with a vengeance, and, you know, Volcker had to go to 20 and a half to really kill it. But it was double digits back then. We're not going to get to double digit inflation. We're not. It's already happening, right? Unless people don't come back to work and keep asking for a lot of money to come back to work. The wage thing.
But do we want to revisit the dynamics of that Volcker administration?
No.
Do we want to risk revisiting the dynamics of that Volcker administration? No, so we can stop and start and go back in history. But is that an ideal scenario for the U.S. economy?
I don't think your parents were born when that was going on, Bonowin. But I think it was different. I really do. I hate saying, God, it was different this time. But it just feels like the after effects of the pandemic and the supply chain, and you still got COVID lockdowns.
You know who we should ask? We should probably ask Guy.
Guy,
what do you think? I'm not going to let you die on that island, Guy.
Yeah, Guy, your kids were, I think, in high school during Volcker, weren't they?
Yeah, no, actually, and it's funny because Paul and I went to grade school together. And we lost touch with each other. We connected back when he was Fed chair. No, I mean, you know, things were different. I think things were measured differently then. And I heard there was a great, it wasn't an interview because he was on with you the entire time, basically. But it was a great conversation. And I think he was pretty steadfast. Look, we got to combat this, and we're going to combat it. And we're going to get it down to two. In order to do that, they can't really take their foot off the gas. I think what the market is saying now is, look, crude's sold off, commodities have sold off significantly. That 9.1 print is probably going to be the highest we see for a long time, which I agree with. But even if we get it down to a 6 handle, mid-6 to low-7 handle, you're still talking about inflation. It's 3 times what they want it to be. So they can't back away. And I think when the market comes to that realization, I believe that's when the sell-off occurs again.
All right, let's talk tech. And if anything's interest rate sensitive, it is tech. Our next guest says that the recent bull run in tech has legs, but one key group will get left behind. Jared Weisfeld is the U.S. tech sector specialist at Jefferies. I think tech's been acting pretty good. I don't know, Jared, and I don't know what that informs us about rates. I think that plays into the idea that maybe they don't need to stay where they are as long. But just technically, is this going back to let people in 20% below where it is right now? I don't know. Do you think the truck gets backed up to where you can load up?
So, to your point, Joe, the viciousness of the rally is truly, you know, remarkable. And let's put things in perspective. The Nasdaq is now up 15% off lows, right? We're talking about in the last 2 weeks. Semis have been leading us higher, up 25% in that time period. Software, as measured by the IGV, up 17% in that time period. So a lot of this is a function of, I think you guys were hitting it right on the head in terms of peak inflation and peak Powell, right? Look what's happened to the 10-year yield, crashing from 3.5% to almost 2.5% yesterday. And this group is the most sensitive with respect to the interest rate environment. But I think the key point is that earnings have been far better than any of us have thought in terms of resiliency from the tech generals, Amazon, Microsoft, Google, Apple. And I can't emphasize it enough in terms of positioning. Everyone generally is underweight tech. It is the lowest in the last 5 years in terms of relative tech exposure. So I think that can certainly keep the group going.
The names that people loved, it's not a 30% pullback either, Jared. That's another thing that kind of gets me. If you even thought about buying some of those stocks where they were and you can't buy them down 50%, then you were wrong. You're just an idiot the entire time to ever want to buy them, right? Is Netflix a buy below 200?
It's funny you mentioned that, Joe, because, you know, you had this vicious rotation that's occurred over the last 6 months where investors were selling all of MFANG to go buy energy, to go buy the notion of an energy super cycle. And now guess what has to happen? We need to re-rotate back into tech because positioning is so underweight. And all of a sudden, you're seeing Microsoft show general resiliency in Azure, which is the key growth driver. Amazon's AWS growing 33% year on year, which is a good key barometer for the economy. So I think you're going to see continued reorientation back towards tech. And we're getting closer to December. So the FOMO is on in terms of fear of missing out. And I think you're going to have that.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know, I've seen it before. It's like, I was scared at the bottom and now that vicious snapback, and I'm never going to get that chance again. New lows or not in the NASDAQ, Jared? New lows or not?
I don't think we see new lows. I think you need to be highly selective. I think, you know, we've seen a recent move higher in software, but software has still lagged. So I think software is probably the most attractive. I think you need to be careful in terms of the multiple that you're underwriting, but don't forget about the M&A put in software. You had Thoma Bravo on the tape with a $3 billion acquisition this morning. We've had more software M&A activity this year than we had last year, and we're only in August. So I certainly think that there are a ton of opportunities in software in particular.
Jared, thanks. It's good to have you on. I felt kind of good listening to you. I don't know. Maybe everybody's not as bearish as I hear a lot. So let's trade this. Guy, the heating pad, that was a good one. That was a good one. But anyway, you brought me candy. You've never brought me like a heating pad, have you?
Yeah, remember I brought you those things that Shaq sells, those pads, those thermopads that, you know, you put the battery in and it helps you. You know exactly what I'm talking about. And there was another time where you hurt your thumb and I brought you Epsom salt so you could soak it on set with Andrew and Becky. So don't sit there and tell me that I don't do
you know
that.
What you should
remember.
You should have brought me Prevagen because I don't remember a lot of this stuff. So how do we trade this guy?
Prevagen, by the way, the worst named product in the history of mankind because nobody remembers it and they make it so you can remember. Listen, I understand, Joe, I totally get what you're saying. Maybe we're all too negative and maybe, you know, we've seen the lows and the market's not going to give you that opportunity again. I just don't think we're in an environment where, okay. And listen, quickly, Apple earnings, were they great? No. Actually, 2% year-over-year revenue growth is the worst we've seen in a while. Microsoft traded down to 242 after they reported, before they said, by the way, we're not seeing a slowdown in demand. So it's not okay, like these earnings were blockbuster. The stock reactions were.
I have no do we go counterclockwise or clockwise? Let's go counter. Karen.
Well, I just, you know, he sounds very bearish, but to Guy's credit, he absolutely was bullish at the bottom. You know, he had that 4,100 out there.
For a trade, right?
Yes, that 4,100 out there, which actually was pretty far away at the time. So kudos to Guy. I'm in his camp now,
okay.
And I just think down rather than up. So
I think I know where you stand. I know where Bonwin said. They told me I don't have time. I got to. I'm sorry. probably my fault. The heating pad stuff coming up. We're watching two big after-hour movers, shares of Booking Holdings and MGM reporting results. We've got the numbers next. Plus, more details on a big crypto hack that sent Solana, in this case, tumbling. So is your digital wallet safe from an attack? The details when Fast Money returns.
The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Wouldn't it be great to have all your investment and retirement accounts in one place? Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today, makes it easy. I use it to put my investment account and 401k accounts into one hub and get expert tips that help me confidently manage my money. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. Whether you're a seasoned investor or are looking for that extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. They're the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. Securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart great investors, and it's how Yahoo Finance ensures you have the insight to look at your wealth in its entirety. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com.
Welcome back to Fast Money. We've got an earnings alert on Booking Holdings, and it has reversed. Shares are racing early gains, now sharply lower, as you can see, and had on 3.5%. Steve Kovacs been listening on the call. Did that do it, Steve?
Yeah, Joe, it's a lot of talk on the call about foreign exchange headwinds, and shares have been turning negative since they delivered those mixed results last hour. Revenue coming in slightly light at $4.29 billion. EPS, on the other hand, solid beat here, $19.08 adjusted versus the $17.57 expected. Gross bookings, though, Joe, surging 38%, with CEO Glenn Fogel saying in the press release it would have been even higher save for those foreign exchange headwinds. And also CFO David Goldin on the call said increase in flight bookings helped offset some of those foreign exchange headwinds. But again, lots of talk about FX here on the call. On guidance, company expecting record revenue in the third quarter, but again, warning about a 12% hit to revenue because of foreign exchange. And they're also talking a little bit about, Joe, how to get other ways on the call to help people with these foreign exchange headwinds, either buying trips through buy now, pay later and other payment options. And by the way, this is the same story we heard yesterday, Joe, with Airbnb and Marriott. Even before that, travel's back. It's not slowing down. No longer buying Pelotons and air fryers. People are getting out in the world instead. And also, Joe, make sure we tune into Squawk Box tomorrow morning. You guys are going to have Mr. Fogel on to talk about these second quarter results and break them all down, Joe.
Groundbreaking show every morning.
Yeah, I've heard of it. It's
6,
pretty good.
6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Thank you. Steve, will you sell stock based on currency headwinds? If management didn't hedge, is that they're bad managers?
Do you know what I always say about FX headwinds? I always think that's transitory. So for me, right. I can't establish a thesis on trading.
But 12% is a real number.
It's a real number, and I'd be more concerned with the 79% that they get from Europe to begin with. So forget about FX. What is going on in Europe right now isn't great, right? And then that's kept people from traveling, but obviously bookings are up. So I don't know if that's getting better, worse, indifferent, or if people are that tired of being home that they have to go anywhere.
Well, currency's cheap, right? So right. It is cheaper to travel.
That's the only tailwind, okay. Right?
But I agree with you on the FX. First of all, it sort of trades like, wow, nobody saw that coming. You can see where the dollar trades every day.
Right.
Right. So I don't know how much they hedge or don't. I agree. I sometimes it feels like the market just dismisses FX. Doesn't matter. Right. Looks through it. Apparently, not right now.
Well, there's like banks, when they take reserves, it's like when they take them, oh, that's bad. When they bring them back in, oh, that doesn't count. Yeah. It's weird. I never understand how that works. Let's shift to MGM Resorts off its after-hours highs, but still positive after beating revenue expectations. What? What? Contessa Brewer? Do I have to come on Fast Money for this, Contessa?
No, an invitation would work. On Squawk Box. I would show up, should you ask. Would you like to hear a remarkable story?
I would.
I mean, we're in what, the second quarter of shrinking GDP? And instead, you have an astonishing earnings quarter for MGM. It has reported its highest property level EBITDA ever. It's fueled by the Las Vegas Strip. Remember, EBITDA, that's a very important earnings metric in gambling. More than $2 billion in revenue. That's up 113% from last year. Of course, it helps that MGM sold its REIT, MGM Growth Properties, to Vici. It turned around and bought the Cosmopolitan, Aria Vidara. Occupancy rates extremely high in Las Vegas. On the call, CEO Bill Hornbuckle doubled down on what he told me in person last month. He said, look, business is strong and customers are spending. He says he's bullish on the domestic business. What they're going to see is the return of international travel, about 80% of 2019 levels in terms of how much flight is coming into the airport there in Las Vegas. He says he's expecting to grow the convention business, and they're looking forward to the return of the ConAgra, big, huge conference for the whole destination in March. And the event calendar, Bill Hornbuckle says, is the best the destination has ever seen. Meanwhile, their digital business, which they share with Entain 50-50, BetMGM generated $608 million in the first half. That's an improvement of 70% from last year. The regionals, they have outperformed as well. We saw with Caesars yesterday, the regionals softening just a bit from 2021 levels. Not true for MGM. Their best second quarter ever. China, not so great. We knew that. Visitation hampered by those strict COVID restrictions. And the margins have compressed somewhat because they're bringing back some of those amenities that had been gone since the pandemic. So they're starting to see those profit margins shrink just a little bit. But all in all, I would say this is a remarkable earnings report for MGM. Joe.
Now I realize, yeah, you do the Vegas thing for us all the time. Was that your idea? Why don't I cover Vegas?
Listen, sometimes when it drops in your lap, you just thank your lucky stars.
Well, that's a rough one. Stupid pandemic, though. But now it's going to be better than ever, I would think, Contessa. Mm-hmm. Thanks. Great to see you. See you soon on Squawk, covering Vegas, I'm sure. Let's trade it. Who's going to trade this? Doesn't tell me who's trading.
I'm long.
You want to trade it? You're long?
I'm long, yeah. I thought it was very good, too. I thought MGM Bet, which is or Bet MGM, which is their online. Yeah. They don't consolidate that, but that was a good number. And I regional was good. Obviously, Las Vegas, as Contessa said, really, really good. China, awful. But it's for them. One of the reasons I like about MGM is very small exposure to China relative to the wins and whomever.
Guy, you own it, Guy?
No, but MGM is a Las Vegas story. I mean, China is such a small component, as Karen said. By the way, Contessa kills it on the Vegas front. Mm-hmm. And for any firms listening that have FX problems, you should just hire Sarah Eisen because she clearly gets it. With that said, MGM's too cheap here, and the year-over-year numbers in Las Vegas are staggering, and that will only continue to get better, I think. So despite the fact, Joe, answering your next question, that I think the market's going lower, I think you can continue to own MGM.
Really? I just wonder whether all the online stuff is like streaming. I mean, you know, we thought streaming. And now everybody's like, streaming, I got too much. You know, I don't know. Is online, you really going to make money in the online stuff, Guy? I think you will, but
Joe,
it wasn't what.
Listen, I watch your show. Listen, quickly, since you asked me, I watch your show religiously from 6 to 9. And if you don't mention gambling once, you mention 100 times. I mean, you're hooked. You and your Cincinnati Reds, who are now in the playoff hunt, oddly enough. I mean, I know what you're doing tonight. Just
right.
Saying.
No, I won a bet already today. I took two underdogs. I took the Rays against the Blue Jays, and I can't remember, but I had a little parlay, and I won, and I never win. Anyway, that's why maybe it will be a great business. There's a lot more fast money to come. Here's what's coming up next.
Crypto hack. Thousands of digital wallets wiped clean as hackers steal millions. The crypto concerns facing a top token. Plus, Block on the clock. With earnings on deck, we're getting a view from the options pits to see how traders are squaring up for results. You're watching Fast Money, live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. We're back right after this.
For more than a decade, Comcast has been committed to bridging the digital divide and connecting millions to affordable, high-speed internet. But the barriers to get connected go well beyond affordability. Through Project Up, Comcast is committing $1 billion to reach millions with digital skills training, resources, and opportunities needed to succeed in a digital world. Project Up, building a future of unlimited possibilities. Learn more at comcast.com/projectup.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Check out Ethereum rival Solana dropping 4% today after a big cyber attack targeted thousands of digital wallets. The hack draining over $5 million worth of coins. Solana's founders tweeting that the hack does not appear to be an issue with the network itself, but with the wallet software. For more on all this, let's bring in Meltem Demirs, Chief Strategy Officer at CoinShares. I read your explanation, Meltem. I don't even know if we want to... I think explain exactly what happened with Solana. If you can, keep it understandable for someone like me and maybe a lot of viewers, because it doesn't seem like it was a deeply ingrained problem with the entire protocol itself.
Yeah, and Joe, I was just saying, you're working so hard this summer. They got you doing mornings, they got you doing nights.
It's a privilege.
It's great to see you. So the Solana issue, look, I think it's really important to separate that Solana, the network itself, is not insecure. There are no issues with the Solana protocol. The issue is with a wallet that was used. It's a very popular wallet. It had an exploit in it, a bug that revealed the private keys. There's this great phrase in crypto, not your keys, not your coins. And unfortunately, this is really common today with a lot of the applications that people are using to access different protocols and different Web3 apps, is sometimes there are bugs in them that are insecure that expose your keys and allow for these exploits. But just to zoom out a bit and give everyone a little bit of context, yesterday evening's events impacted about 8,000 wallets. There are 15 million active wallets on Solana every month. So as a proportion of the overall user base of Solana, very, very small. Of course, the goal is that this should never happen to anyone, right? Worst experience possible. But in context, this was a really, really small exploit, and 5 million in the grand scheme of crypto is not a tremendous number. Goal is zero, but in context, this was small.
Bonawin, you got a question?
Hey, Meltem, Bonawin here. So there's been much a debate made about whether these currencies are securities, whether they're commodities, whether they're going to be regulated by the SEC or the CFTC. Would you mind kind of shedding some light on what the implications are, whether they're bucketed as one security or the other, and how that might affect price dynamics going forward?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think the biggest challenge right now is commodities and securities have very different rules in terms of how you bring these products, these listings to market, and the venues where they trade. Securities have to trade on national securities exchanges. They go through the SEC process. Commodities have their own oversight. They go through, obviously, the CFTC. They have their own process in terms of how products and markets get created. I think one of the biggest challenges right now is there are a lot of different types of crypto venues. There are regulated centralized exchanges like the Coinbases, the Geminis, the Krakens of the world. There are also a lot of decentralized exchanges or these protocols that people use to trade. And so there's all of these different options. They all have different ways of interacting. And the biggest challenge is, what are some of the requirements around transparency, disclosure, right? We have this with securities. Are those requirements relevant to all cryptocurrencies? Are they relevant to specific subset? So there's a little bit of a battle going on. Crypto used to be a hot potato. Nobody wanted to touch it from a regulatory perspective. Now it seems like the SEC really wants to take the lead, but the CFTC is fighting back. So we'll see what happens.
All right, we're going to end it just real quickly. I heard Bitcoin 200-day moving average back above it. I mean, there's some. It's almost like the Nasdaq. It's so correlated, and I don't know whether that's going back to 17,000 either. But maybe not this week.
We'll see. We've seen a lot of inflows over the last month, around 400 million of inflows back into crypto investment products. So there are buyers. Not everyone's having a good time in Europe this summer. Some people are trading. So we'll see. But we're optimistic. And as we go into the fall, I think we'll get a clearer picture of where the momentum's headed.
Meltem, thanks. Joe. Karen, how would you trade this?
Solana?
No, I don't know. They tell me you want to trade something. I don't know. Coinbase?
Coinbase sort of interesting. I do think, I mean, it's bounced back, but I do think they're in an interesting spot. They got a lot of wallet share, and I don't own it, but that one is probably one I could see. I do have Bitcoin exposure, had it for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
Took some money off the table and just, I'm gonna see how this plays out. I actually think it's kind of amazing. It's not lower than where it is now, right? You talk about how, okay, it came down from 69,000, wherever it was, to right here. You have a lot of stocks that have done that as well that didn't have anywhere near the upside. I don't know. It's not my normal thing, but I do have exposure.
I think if it's a risk-on market, I think you're going to get Bitcoin higher. But if you look at Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, which most retail investors know, it's down 57% year-to-date, but it had a great month. If you look at Ethereum Trust Grayscale, that's down 61% year-to-date, but it had an even better month. I think you need a risk-on market. I think everyone who talked about Bitcoin and crypto actually lost a ton of money in the last couple of months. Not coming back. I coach baseball. All of the younger coaches mm-hmm. are talking to me about coins during the spring, about how much money they were making. No one is talking about anything now, and I think they're just upset with it, and they've lost a ton of money. So I don't know where the new capital comes in. I think there's a lot of regulation that needs to be done. A lot of fear of getting hacked and a lot of people licking their wounds.
All right. Let's go. Moving on. Only have an hour coming up. Shares of Block surging ahead of earnings tomorrow. We're going to find out how option traders are playing that name ahead of results. Those details next. Plus, we're digging into two of today's big stock movers. We had CVS and Ulta headed in different directions. More on that when Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money. Check out the shares of Block surging today on the back of PayPal's strong earnings. The company formerly known as Square reports earnings after the bell tomorrow, and option traders are expecting an equally strong report. Tony Zhang joins us with the action. Tony, what are you seeing?
Yeah, as you said, on the back of PayPal earnings up 11%. So it's not surprising to see that Block traded more than two times the average daily volume today. But one trade really stuck out. And if you look at the options chain today, the August 90 and 95 strikes were the most active call buying we saw going into earnings tomorrow. And one particular trade stood out where a trader bought 2,000 contracts of the August 95 calls, spending on average about $2.09 for those call options. And just to put that into context, this is someone who's spending about a little over $400,000 in premium to bet that Square is going to rally at least 10% more between now and the August expiration, which is in under 2 weeks' time. So this is a fairly bullish outlook on the back of what was a very strong move today.
Bonwin, you got thoughts on this one too?
Yeah, I do. I mean, anytime you're kind of trading momentum, and you've seen it in the tech space and specifically in the fintech space, I'd be playing it through options. I think it makes a lot of sense to kind of carry over what we've already seen from some of its peers on the earnings side.
Very good. Tony, thanks for that quick hit. Bonwin, thanks. For more options actions, oh, that's right. I did a Friday, and I did an options action.
Do you like it?
I did.
I loved it.
I was a stockbroker, and I did have a little, you know, about my DraftKings problem. I traded a few options on expiration Fridays, the OEXs, like it right before.
Butterfly spread killed you?
Like at 12, I was in L.A., at 12:30, you buy them for an eighth, they could close at like 11. Not usually, though. Coming up, CVS shares jumping in today's session. How strong sales helped boost the stock, but it wasn't a beautiful day for all stocks. Ulta dropping after announcing a new venture fund. So what had investors so skeptical about Ulta? The details straight ahead. Oh, can I buy a continent? I buy an R? Is it really Ulta? Yeah, it is. Fast Money will be back in two. Welcome back to Fast Money. CVS topping the tape today. Shares jumping over 6% after beating estimates for the second quarter and raising full-year outlook. The company also announcing plans to get into primary care by the end of the year. Guy, you have a take? You own it? You don't own it? You gonna own it? You like going there?
I have a take. My take is, you go back to, well, I mean,
my
if you want to tie a ribbon on this whole show, that's where I got your, heating pad.
All right.
And your Epsom salts, number one. Number two, for you technicians out there, you go back to 2015, the stock topped out at 111, sold off. We got back there in January, February of this year, sold off. We're making another run. The quarter was ridiculous. Bertha reported it on your show this morning, which I happened to watch, as I mentioned, religiously. They beat on revenue. They beat on EPS. The guide was commensurate with the beat, so I'm not making a big deal out of that. But valuation is compelling. So I think it takes out the 111 previous high, and I think we're off to the races here.
Steve?
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm looking at a chart, too, as well, and it just mirrors sort of what Guy said. But I go back to December 2021. We double bottomed in the middle of June on this stock, and it seems like it's been off to the races. So if you look at it through a prism short term, I think they're trying to patch that groundwork for them where they're not selling as many vaccines. So they're trying to dabble in the primary care facilities. They're selling a lot of tests. But technically, the stock is sound.
Who's testing still? Everybody's still testing?
I don't know. I guess they're trying to fill that void, but there's an awful lot. Whenever I'm in a CVS, and I'm in there a lot, usually Guy and I go together. Guy goes down to the salon pause aisle. Yeah. I walk my way over to the pharmacy, and everyone is buying stacks of tests because I think they're still giving them away with insurance companies. They're still giving you a certain amount of tests per month free. They bill the insurance company, so maybe that's a windfall for them as well.
All right, I'm not going to get into this, but
you did already.
I know.
I wish I had.
Meantime, we've got a buzzkill on Ulta. The stock 5% lower after comments from Deutsche Bank, citing softer data for the beauty category in July. Meanwhile, Oppenheimer said there's an opportunity here to buy the dip. Aaron, what do you make of the move?
Well, I'm long Ulta, so I don't love to see it down 20 bucks. However, I was thinking, all right, I'd like to add. They had some great momentum last quarter, and I think they're a little below Sephora, so they're more accessible for people whose wallets are a little bit stretched. But I'm curious why 4 weeks before earnings, sometimes you see somebody downgrade. This wasn't, I guess, a downgrade, but I often wonder, all right, is management sort of giving them a little bit of color so that maybe the street will walk guidance down. I don't know. Do you see that ever? And I'm wondering.
I am amazed at how analysts can still miss by so much when they get so much help.
So I'm wondering if that's happening here. So I'd like to wait and see if someone else sort of confirms that.
Maybe Bonawin. Is it about that or something else?
Yeah, I know Karen's been long this one for a while, and I agree with her. It's been a pretty great turnaround story. The Deutsche Bank piece did mention a pickup in promotionals, and I would like to see, because from my point of view, that might be a read-through into declining gross margins. Now, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but that will be what I'm listening for, and that's ultimately what's going to determine the direction of the stock going forward.
Ultimately, he said. Ultimately, I heard you, Bono. I get it. All right, coming up, one stock making a stealth rally since its 52-week lows. The name that you should be watching, you don't have to, but we're suggesting maybe. Next, don't go anywhere, please. You can if you need to, but we'll be back in two. Talking about gambling, and welcome back to Fast Money. Tesla shares embarking on a stealth rally recently. It's up 14 of the last 16 days. I don't know. Really going to buy it at 600 again? I don't know. The electric automaker is now 49% above its 52-week low that was hit in May. Company holding a vote tomorrow on a stock split. Steve, is it worth chasing the rally?
This is a tech company, right? It's not an automobile company. It's a tech company. So when we open up the show talking about tech and where I feel next week could be the Wednesday, the hump day, and not only for CPI, the hump day for the market. So I think you're going to see a rotation into the value plays, out of these tech plays. But if you look at Rivian is up drastically for the month as well. That was based a little bit on Amazon, but mostly on tech coming back into vogue. I think this is a little bit long in the tooth. I'd let this one breathe for a little bit. And let's wait to see what happens on Wednesday and see if this has any further tailwind to it.
What do you think, Guy?
I think if you look at the chart, which you just had up, we're still in a pretty significant downtrend. And we're probably touching the upper end of that downtrend line. So I think if you've been fortunate enough to be in this, I think you got to sort of take the money and run. Now I'm going to get all the hater tweets at me now, but
it's been
a pretty amazing run, as you said. Yeah, well, it's just the nature of the beast, Joe. But I'm thick-skinned, as you know, which
You are. That you can get it from the other side, too, from the Teslackers, the TSLAQers. They're even crazier. They're even worse than the guy. I'm not either. I don't care about it. We can't own them, and I don't have a Tesla. I love Elon Musk. I love Tesla. They find a way to hate you from either side. You can't win. I guess that means you're doing something right. Right?
I think when you know, you do it right every morning from 6 to 9, along with Andrew and
Becky. I'm
going
to keep coming to you. You don't have to. Do you want to come on the show tomorrow, Guy, as a guest?
Oh, so early. What's his wake up on?
I don't get up that early. I still have the cucumbers under my eyes.
Okay, God. Gabonowin, you got you own it? Or
yeah, well.
You own a Tesla? I don't know.
No, I don't own a car. I don't drive. But that's a whole nother conversation. Anyways, Guy, I'm going to do you a solid here, and I guess I'll take some of the hate off of your plate. But if you look at that chart, you continue to see sequentially lower highs since November of last year. And the stock just made a sharp move up to that 200-day moving average. I'm sure it's going to test it, see if it kind of has any momentum and follow through there. But I'm with the other two. I think this is an opportunity for you to take some chips off the table.
All right, up next, is it really 5:55? Up next, your final trades when we return. It is. Welcome back to Fast Money. Let's get a quick roundup of the earnings in the after hours. EV maker Lucid, I've seen a couple of those. They're kind of cool looking cars, getting crushed after cutting full year production guidance to 6,000 to 7,000 vehicles. The original forecast was 20,000. Clorox also dropping after missing on revenue and giving some weak estimates for the year. Apple supplier Qorvo giving up an early pop and now trading sharply lower after its results. Booking also still lower after citing FX headwinds on its call. And MGM popping on a revenue beat and then setting a record for Las Vegas Strip adjusted property EBITDA of $125 million. It's time for the final trade. Let's go around the horn, starting with you, Bonowin.
VIX flirting with that 20 level. Protection would be on my mind. VIX.
All right, Guy.
Be nice to Andrew tomorrow morning. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, you
that's
guys
makes,
hug it out. I think that would be
makes,
good.
We've been doing really well lately, trying. We differ on a few things, as you know. It's amazing.
Like what?
Black, white.
It's amazing. It's amazing. I haven't. And then sometimes when he switches, then I switch to the other side. Grasso.
So I had to come up with a value stock that I think on Wednesday we're going to switch gears here. So I went with GE. I still own it. GE.
Oh, GE. That's like, you know, it's split 1-for-8. A reverse split.
Is that it?
I thought
it was
74.
I thought it was 80.
Karen.
Yeah. CVS. I don't normally love buying a stock up $6, but a very solid quarter and not a stretch valuation at all.
All right, thanks for watching Fast Money, and you'll get to see tomorrow how nice I am or not nice. Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.